I'm going to give you some sauce now. So I crawl out of that hole I got broken into. It was a whole fiasco. I was like face to face with a burglar in my house, you know.
Man said he's a freshman. Oh, he's cheating, man.
Nah, oh my God.
Bro, fire here. I want you to bait out some smoke. Yeah. If you haven't been trading for 5 years, you're a beginner.
Have you ever used low time frames?
I've tried and I've got absolutely smoked.
Okay. So how low did you go? 1 minute?
1 minute. I've never got, I was a cheapskate at the time, so I never went lower than 1 minute because you have to pay extra for that, don't you?
Mate, when you purchase a second though, you feel like you're going into the source. You're like, yeah, I've got it. And then you're like reading Braille on the chart.
I had an old friend who coincidentally doesn't trade anymore. And he once told me, like we'd been in like different education groups together and stuff. And he messaged me out of the blue asking me for advice and stuff. And so I was like, yeah, of course, like let's jump on a call and stuff. We got on a call and he pulled up some chart work and it was 15 second time frame. And I just looked at him and I said, what's led you down this path? Like, yeah. What makes you think this is a good idea? Do you know what I mean? I don't know who you've looked up to, who's sort of advised this kind of thing. And we looked at his trade log and it was loss.
And then there'll be a big win.
But it wasn't even a big win. It was just a tiny win. Then loss. And I sort of said, at what point in this process do you think that's not working and I've got to switch it up? But people get, they're a bit of a stickler when it comes to time frame because they see things online that they potentially think, that would be class to do that. This dude's been in and out for, you know, 5 minutes and he's got a 5R. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not 5 minutes. Like that could be 10 years of somebody's life. Like more power to them if they can trade on the 5 minute or the 1 minute or something like that. I can't myself. I get absolutely rinsed. I like to stalk my trades. I like to wait. Like I have a lot of patience when it comes to trading.
Sounds like a lion waiting for a gazelle.
But that's the, you know, it suits me. And a lot of people would probably look at my style and go, that's too boring. But for me, it allows me to do other things. Like it allows me to spend time with my family. It allows me to work on business stuff. Like I can do whatever I want while still taking all of my trades. Whereas, you know, if you're a scalper and you're on the 1M or the 5M, you are going to miss trades if you walk away from your desk. Simple. I sort of just said, I don't understand what's led you down this path to think that this is a good idea. And whilst I've known people who trade the lower time frames extremely effectively, I've never known a professional trader, somebody who comes from either like a trading floor, a brick and mortar prop firm, a hedge fund. I've never met one. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe there's guys out there, but I've never met one that advocates that, especially for a beginner. If you haven't been trading for 5 years, you're a beginner.
And I guess it's that thing, the more complex something sounds, we tend to think, oh, it must be what I'm missing because it sounds complex, right? But I was at an event the other day and Mark said it, there's a book called, I think it's the 16 Laws of Success or something along those lines. And he asked how many people had read it. And like, everyone was like, no, like not heard of it, something like that. And he actually went, who's read Think and Grow Rich? And obviously everyone's like, yeah. And that book is basically a watered down version of the 16 Laws of Success. I think that's what it's called. If it's wrong, I'll put in the comments. And he just said like, all these, like back then, all the people that had the knowledge that were wealthy, that were like billionaires, millionaires, whatever, they didn't kind of want to share it. People are like, we can't share this with normal people because they'll find the clues to success. And I think there's a quote in there and it says something like, it's so simple, the keys to success, that it will just go over their heads. And like, it really hit me because like, when I come into this space, I thought the more you understood about the chart, the better it would be. So when someone said to me, you know, X, Y, and Z does this and equals that, you're like, oh, I need to know that because that's what I need. But what you realize is, like you say, the brick and mortar prop firms, hedge funds, the bigger boys, most of them just have a really, really simple system that they can just execute on repeat. And then they obviously go down the route of, you know, making sure they've got risk management, psychology. How did you, obviously you dabbled in it, but how did you avoid getting really sucked in? Or was it that you just got humbled quick and you were like, fuck this?
So I kind of went through like waves, right? So when I first like started, obviously I was introduced to the industry in the same way as everybody else. So I went bored with people with that sort of story. But I found Tradedante very, very early on. And you know I bang on about Tradedante all the time. Like basically my brain is like a mini version of his because everything he says just resonates with me. But I found him, I'm going to say probably a few months into my journey, right? Now, for anybody who doesn't know, Tradedante is an ex-proprietary trader, like brick and mortar prop firm. He's been a trader for over 20 years. So this dude has knowledge. He knows what he's talking about. And it's not smoke and mirrors. And you get this, like I've done his course and stuff and watched like his lectures. they are very long, and it's on like MT4, like old school MT4. So you really have to pay attention to what he's saying. And the dude does not miss a trick. Like, you know, sometimes you'll stumble if you don't know what you're talking about. It could be like a 3-hour video where it's just bang and it's so smooth. And so that was kind of my main exposure to this is what's possible. So then I started trading his strategy and you know, following like his style with stuff, which is very like key levels. They have to fit certain criteria and stuff. This is actually how I trade today as well. So we're talking like 4.5-5 years on. Yes, I'm still a beginner. I will be a beginner until I'm managing 50 million, you know. I was trading levels back then, right? But I didn't necessarily have the mindset to do this. So I was still figuring out myself within the industry or within the career, if you will. And so I was trying to take something that a successful trader who's worked for funds, who's worked for prop firms, who, you know, now still does, I think he works from home, but he still trades proprietary funds. You know, and I'm trying to take their system and replicate it, but I'm not Trader Dante. I'm not this successful person. I'm a freshie, basically.
Man said he's a freshie.
And so I couldn't find success with it, and I got bored. And I was just, basically what I was doing is I wasn't necessarily sticking to his rules. I was sort of thinking, I want to get in this trade. The level's not great based on the rules, but I'm going to trade it anyway. You just get smoked. Whereas these days I'm looking at a level and I'm like, this isn't a great level. Great, clear chart, walk on, you know, next chart, or just walk away sort of thing. But then I'd say 2 or 3 years in, I started to find smart money concepts. And I never really got dragged into that kind of thing, like ICT and stuff like that. And I mean, I've watched some of his videos in the past, but, and you know, this isn't throwing shade at him. It's very hard to watch his content because there's so much of it and it's all on YouTube. So it's not like a structured course. Yes, I know that you can just watch them all and stuff. But because of that, I'm very organized. And I look at that and I'm like, I don't know where to start, so I'm not going to start. I'm going to find my own path. So I didn't really get dragged into that kind of stuff. And then I found a group called Offshore Keys, who are fantastic guys. You know, I rate them highly. And they trade like some subset of kind of smart money concepts, but it comes more from like Chris Laurie. I don't know if you...
I've heard of the name.
I'm sure he was like, he's like an Olympic athlete turned trader and now has like a fun... He's the dude's a real deal. And his style is very similar to the whole SMC stuff. It's all about like imbalances, inefficiencies and stuff. And so I sort of turned my trading down this direction in the hope of, oh, that strategy didn't work, so I'm going to try a new one. I actually found some success with it. It wasn't like my career didn't go boom, but it kind of got me to that next level. And then I met somebody who I'm very fond of called Pip Smuggler. I think I've also told this story before, but basically he trades lower time frames. He bare bones analysis, barely draws anything on a chart. I don't want to give too much away because I'll give his old edge away. And it has adapted since then, but I tried to replicate his style, right? And I got smoked on my live account as well. I got absolutely rinsed. I didn't lose anything. It was only a couple of percent, but I risked very low. So I was just getting rinsed and I was like, damn, I need to stop this. I need to go back to what I know. Then I sort of went back to trading levels like Dante, but with a new mindset that I'd built over the course of the past couple of years. And that's kind of like my introduction to the industry, to where I am now kind of thing.
So that's so interesting, lots to unpack, but like, I love the fact that you've gone down mindset, because anyone watching is going to be like, here we go again, he's going down the mindset. That's my jam. But like, it's so interesting to see you kind of explored, but you had the awareness to be like, maybe this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people struggle with that nowadays, is they're almost too deep in, and it's like, well, I think we spoke about it before, it's like you're about to click the button and it's about seeing yourself before you click it and stopping. And I feel like a lot of traders can only do that in hindsight. They're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. But it sounds like you identified you shouldn't be doing that before you did it too bad. Like you said, you lost a few percent. Obviously, I know you're very like risk averse, and that's something that's nailed into you. Did you do any kind of mindset work, or do you think it was just like growth from experiencing a trauma? Because they always say, right, we experience trauma and then sometimes it has to get so bad that then you make a change. You know, like you hear people, they might have had a near-death experience and they just become a different person. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you didn't experience that kind of trauma, but do you think it traumatized you in a point that you were just like, no, and that allowed you to move on? Or did you do some kind of different inner work?
So I've never really, she's going to be controversial because I've never really, other than like journaling and studying my journal and stuff, I've never done focused mindset work. I've tried meditation. I'm not going to say it doesn't work because I know people who swear by it. But for me, like, I just didn't gel with that kind of activity and spending time doing that. Again, it's not to say that you shouldn't try it or this person, you know, shouldn't try it, but it's just I didn't gel with that kind of thing. But naturally, I'm quite a resilient person anyway, and I pick up on things quick because I'm so analytical. So I come from like a data analysis background. So whenever I get presented with data, it doesn't have to be like a spreadsheet, but you know, if I go, oh damn, I've lost the past five trades in a row, that to me is data. And I'm going, okay, well, how do I analyze this? What do I take from that? How can I improve? And so I pick up on things very quickly. And I think mindset for me was just something that, like I say, I got thick skin anyway. And so I just carried on and carried on and carried on. But over time, I've sort of just developed it through experience, and now it's kind of rock solid. And then I speak to guys who have worked so hard on their mindset, and I'm kind of like, I'm sort of where you are. Maybe not as like, you know, rock solid, but I'm like, I'm sort of where you are. But I think that's a testimony to like how I'm built, you know, as a person, because not everybody has that, and sometimes that's not a good thing, you know. But in terms of like trauma, obviously, you know my story, I've spoke about it before, so I won't go into too much detail, but obviously the first half of 2022 for me was like the best financial period of my life. Like I was, you know, I was killing it, trading in crypto, all these different things. Then halfway through the year, I lost a hell of a lot of money, which affected my trading. Then when I started to kind of crawl out of that hole I got broken into, it was a whole fiasco. I was like face to face with a burglar in my house, you know. Mrs. was 38 weeks pregnant. So that to me was the trauma. I didn't care about my trading performance because I always knew that, you know, in 5 years' time, I'm going to look back as a trader and think, oh, that was just a bad period. What did I analyze and take away from it? So bad performance doesn't ever scare me because I know that it's not going to affect me long term. But that was trauma that stuck with me. And again, it affected my performance because they broke in through my office. I didn't want to go and sit in my office on a night, you know, not because I'm scared or anything, but just the aura and the energy in the house wasn't right. And so, like you said, did you make a change and stuff? We decided to move out, so we left that house. But whilst we did that, I'm a big advocate of this, and I think I spoke to you about this the other day. And I said, if I feel like I'm going through a bit of a lull or I need kind of a kick up the rear end, which everybody does, I don't care how strong your mindset is or whatever, everybody needs a kick up the rear end sometimes. I change my chart colours. So I change my chart colors just to refresh the, you know, the brain. I'll sometimes switch from dark mode to light mode on like my browsers and stuff. And for me, that keeps me in the mindset of, oh yeah, things are changing, things are happening, and it keeps me focused. And so not only did I change my chart colors, but I also went back to my old style of trading, which kind of with my new mindset and my new resilience, I just started flying.
Sick, man. So you had a lot happen to you. But I want to get into the little bit of the resilience. Is that something you've had like your whole life? Have you been that kind of person that not a lot phases you, and when it does, because you said something there that you're able to sort of see the bigger picture, right? 5 years time. Not everyone's got that. And obviously it's hard to relate to people. For people that are perhaps facing those battles, that's like their main focus. They're like, oh, but why am I experiencing this? And for you, like you say, you've not really had to experience it to a degree because you're resilient. Is there anything you can pinpoint from a childhood that made you resilient?
Again, I think I'm naturally built that way to a degree, but I wasn't bullied when I was younger. I don't want to make it sound like it was worse than it was, but I don't want to say I was like massively overweight, because when you're a kid, sometimes it's puppy fat, but I was fairly big. So, you know, I wasn't huge, but I was fairly big, but people still sort of picked up on that, right? And would make comments and stuff. And so when I was old enough to like go to a gym, I went to a gym, I started fighting, I got in the best shape of my life. And at that point I was like, this has taken me, like I've had to put up with that for so many years of like little digs, you know, like even with your friends, if you get into a jokey argument and then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, well you're fat. And you're like, whoa, that's a bit uncalled for, you know? And as a kid, that hits harder than if, you know, now, if you told me now I'm fat, I'd be like, all right. Yeah, so, yeah. But as a kid, when you're still finding yourself, something like that can be detrimental for years, you know, and even though it's just, you know, a comment, if that keeps getting banged on at you, that can spiral you out of control, right? But again, I think just because of who I am as a person, I just took it for years and years and years. And when I was in a position to be able to do something about it, and I know I could have gone out for runs and stuff as a child, but I was a kid. You know, what kid thinks, oh, I need to get in shape? But as soon as I switched that mindset, I was, you know, got in wicked shape and I was living my best life. And at that point, I was like, wow, I really put up with all that stuff for so long. And now look at me. Mm. And then I think that was for me, like, it turned my career around, because I was sort of thinking at the time, like, I've just done this, right? I can do anything. So, you know, and that's something that I carry on to this day. If you say, do you know how to do X, Y, Z? I'll be like, no, but I'll go find out.
I love that. I'm very similar with the whole, do you know how to do this? No, but I'm going to figure it out. Like, I've got jobs in the past that I wasn't even meant to be at the interview for the job, and I couldn't do the job, but I somehow managed to get the job and do the job. And I'm like, you look back and you're like, what? Like, you're off your head. But I'm very much someone that adapts. And obviously, we all have, the reason I mentioned the childhood is because a lot of the things that happen to us as a child usually become like our image. They become who we are. And then unless people actually go through a process of perhaps rewiring the image, sometimes it has a negative effect. But it sounds like for you, actually had a positive effect, because what you experienced, you turned into a positive, turned your life around in terms of, like you say, you got into fighting and stuff. Do you think also, because obviously when you're fighting, there's a massive level of discipline that has to come in. Do you think that paved the way of you being, because we always speak like we're very similar, right? You're disciplined, you've got structure, you've got routine. And to some people, like, they're chaos, right? Some people have like a chaos life. You're not like that. It doesn't vibe with you, it doesn't vibe with me. Do you think fighting played a part in that?
Yeah. One thing I will say, though, is I think you can be chaotic and it's still like structured chaos.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, because I'm disciplined, but you take it to a whole nother level, like in terms of like your daily activities and stuff. But fighting for me was massive in terms of, you know, having a goal, having a strategy to get to that goal, knowing that you're not the best in the room, and that's okay. And that's kind of what you're trying to achieve. And a lot of that related to trading. So I was still sort of, I wasn't training as hard when I started to learn how to trade. And then, you know, a couple of years after we went into COVID. So my kind of training fell off then. And I haven't really been back since. Obviously, I go on the bag, you know, pretty much a few times a week, but I haven't been back to, like, you know, classes and doing it properly and sparring and stuff. But in terms of, like, even just showing up right to, like, you know, a Muay Thai class or Jiu-Jitsu class, let's say you feel like crap. The last thing that you want to do is go and have your ass handed to you by somebody twice your size, you know, because there's not enough people going into spar. So there was times when I was sparring people who were like 6'2", 6'3", built like a brick shit house. And there's me, like, I was in decent shape at the time, but I was, you know, I wasn't big. And I'd just go and have to spar with them and I'd get my ass handed to me, you know, give as good as you get, but there's only so much I can do to someone who's that much bigger, you know. But being able to stand up and say, I'm actually going today, and I want to get hit in the face and sort of face that adversity head on. It builds a new level of, I'm not even going to say discipline. I just think it's, I'm just going to go out and do this.
Character building.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You build a strong character. And I think that definitely will portray into trading, because trading will do the same. It will hit you in the face and it will hit you in the face and hit you in the face. And you've got to kind of deal with that. And I think a lot of people struggle to deal with, you know, when we're at school, we're kind of programmed winning's good, losing's bad. So when you bring that kind of concept into life and you lose, you're like, oh, I'm bad. But in trading, you actually learn the most from losing. Like, I found that way. You know, you like you say, you had that moment where you went to those time frames, you lose, and you're like, actually, I can learn from this. And you made an adaptation, which has led you to where you are now. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, you have to always look at these lessons. Just like you say, there's a reason we have weight categories, you know, fighting someone that big, there's a reason there's a weight category.
It's fun, though, don't get me wrong. It is fun.
Like, you can have a laugh with it, but you also, at the same time, are like, you'll learn from it and you'll pick things up, but there's a limit to some things. I think, like, with like your trading as a whole now, obviously you're very much, you've got your system, you know what you're doing. And like, you know, when we speak back and forth, you're like, I've got an order set here and I'm waiting for it. And you're very good at, you know, if it tries to, what I think people struggle with trading is if it tries to entice you perhaps before your level, and it might give you that, say you're waiting to buy it and it comes in 10 pips away and then it starts to push. A lot of people are like, oh, I've got to adapt, you know, because you hear this word like adapt in the market and stuff. You're very good at not doing that. Because you're set on your levels, you trust your analysis, right? You believe in yourself. I want to get into data a little bit, because I know you're a massive fan of data, and this is your lingo, right? Mm-hmm. For anyone at home that doesn't really get data, or maybe doesn't have data, would you have any advice on how they should approach gathering and collecting data and the importance of having it?
Well, the first thing is, obviously, you've got to record your trades. That is an absolute bare minimum. You know, if you want to improve and you want to take it to the next level, you have to be recording what you do, because the human mind is not programmed to remember everything. You know, I could take a trade last week and I forget, I remember the position, but I forget my whole reasoning, my thought process going into it. Even like before we sat down, I looked at my open orders and I was thinking, did I set this order last night? Like what? And do you know what I mean? It's
yeah, yeah.
You have to have sort of a history that you can look back on and be like, I understand what I was doing at that time. So in terms of getting out and starting that, I would say if you've never journaled before, just start taking screenshots and saving them, and then kind of grow it over time. So, I mean, you could look at my trading journal and it is intense. Like the amount of stuff that I record, which I'm sure we'll go into in a little bit more detail. And it doesn't have to be that way. That, again, that way works for me because I like analyzing all this sort of data. And I'm sure we'll talk about it as well, sort of the revelation that you've had by studying your data recently, and the things that, you know, analyzing it and reviewing it, what that can bring to your system. But I would start with just the basics. You know, you've got to record your pair, like have a screenshot, your entry date, your time, your entry session. I mean, you can work that out based on the time, but having it where you can just filter a spreadsheet down or whatever it may be, you know, your stop loss, your target. The reason you record all this is because you can spot anomalies and then you can spot behavioral patterns. So for example, if my average stop loss is 8 pips, I mean, it's much, much wider, but let's just say for argument's sake, 8 pips, 8 pips, 8 pips, and then I have a 45 pip stop, then back to 8 pips. You'll look at that and you'll be like, well, that's an anomaly. So let's dive into why I took that trade. Coincidentally, it's probably a loser because it's not your system. Mm. Well, it's clearly not your system. And then ask yourself why that happened. Is it a strategy related issue? Is it a psychological related issue? You can gather that from your data, like hands down, because again, entry time, if it's 10 a.m., 10 a.m., 10 a.m., 6 p.m., 10 a.m. You're like, well, why did I enter a trade at 6 p.m.? Have I ever done that before? Well, let's look at my journal. And so just start collecting data. It takes a bit of time, but I don't know. I could go on for days telling people to do it, but no. If somebody doesn't want to do it, they're not going to do it. But ultimately, you're never going to improve if you have no history to base it off.
Yeah, so I get a question a lot of the time when I just make YouTube videos, people are like, can you show me how to make data? And I always find it a hard video to try and package. I'm like, how do I do that? And obviously you've got things like, you know, you've got FX replay now where you can back test on that, and you know, you've got different ways of back testing. But I feel like I've always said you learn best from live data, you know, actually the mistakes you make in the market, because back testing's great to get an edge, but it's always simulated to a degree. So you do have to bear that in mind. But at the same time, what you do live is usually the problem, because I always see people, they've got a system that's an edge and it works in testing, but then when they go live, it doesn't work. And they're like, oh, it's a system. And I'm like, have you ever thought it's you? Like the person using it. And I think that's where like tracking so many different metrics is important, but it takes time. Like you say, it's a long period. Obviously, you know, for your data, you're quite big on, is it like sequence events that happen over a period of time, as opposed, because you're not just someone that just finds an entry model and logs your entry model. Like you're like, for example, how often's the high of the week form X, Y, and Z? So you're looking at like, I can't remember how you put it the other day, but you're looking at common patterns in the market as well as just, there's my edge, getting it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think this is actually a really interesting point to touch on, because I don't want to sound like all blowing smoke up my own arse here, but my statistics and my data, I gather it very different to a lot of people. So I have two different types of analysis that I record separately and sort of merge them together afterwards. So I have my constant variables and I have my non-constant variables. So the constant variables is things that are repeatable over time. So for example, you know that tomorrow the market will open and there's going to be an 8 a.m. Yeah. So you can foresee that ahead of time. A non-constant variable is something like price, which the best example I can give to this for you to understand is when Bitcoin was at $69,000 or whatever it may be, and then it dropped down to $20,000, everybody was ripping their hair out. Oh my God, it's 20K, we're all poor. You know, we're never going to make it, all this sort of nonsense. Drops a little bit further to 16,000. Again, that pulling the hair up goes back up to 20,000. And all of a sudden they're like, we're so back. You know, price is going to go to the moon. This is it. We're going to be rich again. And I'm like, but 2 weeks ago, price was the same as it is now. But trader behavior and trader emotion at those two different points in time is completely different. So that variable isn't constant, because what occurred over here is different to what occurred over here, although it's the same. Mm. It's advertised by the market as being the same price. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a little bit more in depth, like, but this is this is what you can like, this is how I decipher my analysis, right? So my entry models are based on non-constant variables and all my sort of statistical data and how I trade, why I trade is based on my constant variables, okay, because it's less likely to change over time. So we know, for example, with the constant variables, you're going to have times a day, you're going to have days of the week, you're going to have fundamental data, which is a funny one because it actually fits the bill for both. So it's a constant variable because, you know, for example, the first Friday of every month, you're going to have an NFP release. The non-constant variable side to it is that you don't know what the release is going to be. But what you can do to get the data behind that is track it. So you go back to every first Friday of every month for the past 10 years. You log what happened before the release. You log whether the consensus was higher or lower than actual and whether people was expecting a raise or a lower figure. And then you track what happened after, track what happened post-release. You'll be able to find specific patterns there. This is why I hate the people shouldn't trade news. Like, if it doesn't fit with your system, that's fine. But what if I've tracked 10 years worth of data and I can tell you categorically that 70% of the time, if NFP is going to print lower, it's going to run up for the day, it's going to hit, it's going to bang, spike higher into a level, and then it's going to tank. If you can build data on that, you know for certain that 70% of the time it's going to happen. Whereas like when somebody, if you track statistics, even on something as good as FX Replay, you're still bringing discretion into it. So for example, if I trade levels, I'm still going to be picking the best levels, I'm still going to miss levels. So your statistics are never going to be 100% accurate. This is why when somebody says I've got an 80% strike rate or 60% strike rate, I'm sort of like, I give them a 5% leeway. I'm like, well, you don't know that because you still brought discretion into play. Whereas you cannot do that with constant variable. And then what you was talking about with the highs and lows of the week. So because I'm a swing trader, I like an easy life, right? So I try and catch a high and low of the week every week. So that's why I look predominantly on Wednesdays, because I've tracked years worth of data on multiple assets, just recorded the high of the week, the low of the week, which day it was formed on, whether it's bullish or bearish. There's kind of no correlation there. Sometimes there is, like, usually what you'll find is it's pretty much 50% of the time it's bullish, 50% of the time it's bearish. Obviously, if you go through a trending market, it's going to be different. But where you really begin to build the patterns is, okay, well, statistically, I'm going to give you some source now, right, from my data. So I think I've posted this similar things on Twitter before. I know that I won't give you the actual statistics because this is part of my edge, right? So I know there's a statistically high probability, a very high probability, that gold will form the high or low of the week on a Wednesday and it will provide a swing failure pattern, which, if you don't know, again, is a traded anti-term. So you have a previous swing high, swing low. It will run it. So some people call it a liquidity raid, a sweep, whatever it may be. And on the H1, I look for a candle close, like within that range. So it'll sweep the low, for example, and close above. If I see that on a Wednesday, it's running until Friday. There's like very, very high chance it runs through Friday. And so again, people say, oh no, I don't hold trades overnight. And I'm like, why not? I know for a fact, if I catch this move, I'm in till Friday, I don't care. Because I know that that's going to happen. And that comes down to me studying these nuances that other people don't look at, which is what I love, because I don't want to be the same as everybody else testing the same things. I want to look at certain things that people don't have. That's your edge.
Yeah, and it gives you confidence in the edge as well. Like you say, if you catch that on a Wednesday and you'll hold it to the Friday, that's not out of, oh yeah, I think this is going to run because I feel like it. You've got your hard-driven data. That yes, there can always be a different occurrence in the market, but statistically speaking, it could run in your favor, so you're going to benefit from that move. And I think that's where a lot of people do go wrong with testing sometimes, is they just test the entry model setup every time. And I've had this before when, like, I'll show an entry model and then people will find a way to use it everywhere.
It's the lowest common denominator, right? And they say that is the system.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like everything that comes, like most people that don't do top-down analysis, it's like that's all building blocks for the entry model. Just seeing an entry model, like I used to show a thing, I used to call it a chalk. It's gone crazy now, this word chalk.
You create chalk?
I don't want to say I created it, yeah, but all I'm saying is if you go back to before that chalk was a thing, because it's obviously Wyckoff change of character, but if you go back to 2020, early 2021, no one was saying chalk.
Yeah.
And everyone started saying chalk. People have got more views on YouTube about chalk than me. but I just said it was basically a market shift, a boss, whatever you want to call it, but it was just a small market shift. And then it would be like interaction with supply or demand, and then you would find your entry point and you'd play that. And when people saw that, they were like, oh my God, that's what I've been missing. And then they would send you data with a month of 1M chocks and shifts, and it'd be like, why did this one work? And I'm like, that's just the last piece is getting in, but what about all the other stuff? And people don't look at that. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong in trading. And even with ICT, like, you see a lot of people dissecting ICT, like we spoke about earlier, you know, the way he packages it. Supposedly that's so it can filter out people that are actually serious and not serious mm-hmm. and whatnot.
I've heard that.
I've never really watched his videos. I've not gone on YouTube and actively looked into it. I'm not sure why, but I just never really came across it. Obviously now it's a very big thing. I know a lot of people will repackage his stuff to try and explain it better, and they've built businesses from that and stuff. But it's very interesting to see how, when you look at the people that do that, a lot of their comments, it's always like, give me an entry model, give me an everyone wants the entry model bit. But I feel like within trading, that's, and I was the same, when I first came into trading, I just thought, I need to know how to get in the market. Like, that's what I'm lacking. But I don't think, you don't realize until as you travel through your journey that why you're getting into the market is the most important part. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying there, if a Wednesday that system prints, you're getting in. But perhaps if it printed on a Thursday, you wouldn't. But just because, well, I think where people go wrong is because it's the entry model on a Thursday, they'll just hit it anyway. And I think that's where people's strike rate just goes ping.
Yeah.
Because they're just going, well, there's my entry model. And I think that's where when people say, like, follow your system to a T, this is very black and white, that, because it's like, you can follow a black and white plan. If I said to you, every time you sweep a H1 high and it closes below sell, you can follow that black and white and probably get a statistical edge across a period of data. But then in a live market, there'll be the trader discretion that will influence the decision that's made, right? And like you say, if it printed on a Thursday, maybe you wouldn't hit it. And I think a lot of people could take from that they could actually dive deeper into their system. And I think,
you gotta think outside the box.
Yeah.
That's like, the biggest
thing. It's always entry model. And I see it when people, I see some of these great people posting about these ICT models and they're like, I've really dulled it down for you to do this. And then I'll sometimes sift the comments because I'm big on like human psychology. I like to see what people think. And it's always the same. Show me how to get in here. How did I get in here? But no one's ever asking like, why are we getting in here in the first place? They're just going, oh, my entry model set up, so it must work. And it's like, if it was that easy, everyone would be a billionaire. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, and obviously, again, that's why, and I don't have much experience with this, but I believe that's why potentially some of the algorithms people code, and I know you've got experience in this to a degree in the algo side, they code algorithms to perhaps follow the edge, but sometimes you need that human discretion to make the right decision.
It's a completely different ballgame, yeah. It's trying to code a robot. Like, an algorithm will usually, it's extremely hard to get it to mirror a strike rate of a human, because humans can look at something and say, I've seen this before, I'm sitting out of the market, right? Whereas an algorithm, it's very hard, unless you are some major, major programmer, to sit down and be able to build that kind of, and yes, we have machine learning, artificial intelligence, but it still doesn't have the eyes that a human has and goes, I remember this from last week, I got smoked, so I'm gonna sort of sit out for a moment, you know? So it's two completely different ball games, and they have to be approached in, you know, as such.
Yeah, it's interesting, because that's what I try and use that as an analogy to people. I'm like, if it was as simple as just hit your edge, like you're hitting your head off a wall. Yes, I get probabilities and all that sort of stuff, but sometimes you'll have a low quality trade and you'll be like, you know what? When I take this, it usually smokes me. Mm-hmm. You can make that decision to not take it. For yourself, obviously you trade quite a lot of pairs. Do you have any rules on risk exposure for the day? Because I've kind of advocated lately, what was a real big change for me, because I used to be someone that would just hit five trades in a row and just keep hitting it, whereas now I'm like a one loss rule a day. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything like that yourself?
The only thing that I have is, if I don't set an order and it gets tagged, I won't set another order. So for example, in fact, yesterday, Euro Yen hitting it, an area that I would have liked to have hit the bid on. I'm not a fan of trading on Mondays, just because from my data, statistically, it's just probably the worst day for me to take a trade.
A lot of people don't like Mondays, you know.
Well, I mean, for me, the actual theory as to why I don't like Mondays is because I like to see a high, at least be able to look at it and go, I think the high and low is going to be created on this day. Monday, it's a clean slate, right? So it can go up, it can go down. You just don't know, yeah, at that point. When you get to a Wednesday, you sort of, like, obviously I trade levels. So if I've got an inverse level that I'm looking at and on the Wednesday it's tickling just below, I'm like, great. Now I've got my, like, my execution model, that's where I'm gonna look to pivot into the market. But I've also reckon this, it's a higher chance of today it's gonna mark the high of the week, you know, because if we're bearish, Monday's not gonna mark the high of the week. Or for example, that's just like random. But what you've also got to consider is that the market's whole job, right, is to just facilitate trade. There is no, I mean, this is probably gonna spark some some people, but there is no like darker side to the market. It's there to facilitate trade between central banks, between governments, between like retail traders, everyone and above, you know. It's there to facilitate somebody getting a position to somebody else, you know. And that doesn't have to be to make profit. Like there's going to be, for example, if a company in Canada wanted to sell oil to a British company, the Brits can't just go, well, here's £1 million. They're going to have to convert that to a Canadian dollar. And therefore, the market is there to facilitate that trade, right? So even though that's a large size, it's not for the British company to go, well, I'm going to make profit on this position. Yeah. But and when you think of it like that, you think the market's facilitating trade, right? And this is another sort of ideology that I took very early on with Dante. You sort of look at a chart and you go, well, where does it have to go to facilitate a position or facilitate a trade? Where is it likely to test? Because as he says, I don't want people to think that this is my words, but I'm paraphrasing. The market's curious and the market will test areas. It will test previous swing points because obviously we know that's where liquidity is. So it will test and probe these areas. And as a trader, it's your job to go, this is the point where I'm going to get in the market. This is where I think it needs to go to facilitate trade. I'm just going to jump in on that move, right? But 24/5 or 24/7, depending on the market that you trade in, it will continuously advertise positions to you. So it's your job as a trader to go, well, this position doesn't fit my plan. And this is why I have my rule. If I miss it, I won't re-enter. It's your job to actually pick out the one position in that chart or in the market price, whatever you want to say, and say, that's where I'm going to hit it. Because the market will just completely consistently advertise to you. So like when you say, it comes to my entry, swerves 10 pips above, I could go, it's turning here, I'm going to clip it, which a lot of beginners do. Hmm. And I say, why did you do that? You hit stop, you was looking at this level. And they'll go, well, yeah, but it looked like it was turning above. And I'm like, yeah, but that's a market advertising to you that there might be an opportunity. Whereas you know the edge is in the level that was lower, perfectly tagged, went to target. And then they'll lose that trade, then they'll short it because they're like, oh, well, now we're going down. And then they'll hit stop on that. And I'm like, you've took two or three L's, but the level that you planned at the original, at the start of the day, that actually worked. Now you tell me that's a strategy problem, because it's not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's always easy to point at the strategy because people don't like self-accountability and our ego is always in the way. Mm-hmm. You know, I've learned that myself. I always used to think the market was searching for me. It's like, oh, Alb's in, let's do him. You know, it's really not bothered about me. I'm not that great that the market's trying to find me. And I think a lot of people need to realize that. Obviously, everyone has terminology, like, oh, we took out retail, we did this. But what I find fascinating sometimes is I see us as retail, right? And then most people will be in the same trade. So I'm kind of like, who did they take out? Because we're all, do you know what I mean? So I don't really use those terminologies.
But again,
anymore.
Think about it. That's the market's facilitating trade. Not every move has to be a manipulative move. Mm. And this is something, and maybe it's a marketing ploy that every move in the market is a manipulation to stop people out. It's not, right? And anybody who says it is either marketing something or they haven't got a clue what they're on about. But the market's just facilitating positions. It's facilitating trading. And so, yeah.
No, I love that. I think it's always good to chat about. One thing I want to go into here is obviously trading's a lonely game, right? Obviously, you know, we've got partners, supportive partners. How did you find trading alone when it's tough? And kind of like, was there anything that stood out for you? Because a lot of people always reach out, you know, they're like, I'm really lonely in trading. It's really difficult. It's really hard. I'm not trying to make you sound like a loner. But I'm just saying, like, did you get into networking? Do you think that's the good side where social media can be helpful?
Okay, so I actually started trading with a friend. So I was never really alone. Mm. We would message all day. We worked together. So we was in each other's company like every day apart from the weekend. And then we went into lockdown. That's when things got like real. We knuckled down. We would sit on Zoom calls for like 10, 12, 14 hours a day sometimes. So I never really experienced that like wholehearted aloneness, if you will.
Yeah.
But then we didn't separate. Like we're still still like very close now and stuff. We speak a little bit less because he's kind of taken a back seat with the trading while he's focusing on other things in his career. But I started joining communities and sort of getting integrated. But then what I found was I didn't necessarily like that because I was so used to just having one person that we could bounce off. But I actually picked up like some very good relationships, some good connections and some good tips, for my own trading, but for by being in different communities, but I just never gelled with them. Like, I wasn't one to start posting in a community of 1,000 people. I ain't got time for that, you know. But I do think, like, if you're a beginner and you are feeling lonely and you just want somebody, like, joining a community is probably the best thing to do, because there's not many people who are willing to just sit and DM you all day. Like, if you DM me on Twitter and ask me a question, I'll respond to you, but I'm not going to sit there and mentor you in my Twitter DMs. Do you know what I mean?
Nah.
And so finding a community that you gel with, which is the biggest thing, and not just trying to strategy hop, like, you're actually going there for it. This is why I joined Offshore, right? I already knew Offshore's system because I'd seen it so much on Twitter. I'd actually reverse engineered all their charts. I don't think I ever told them this.
Hopefully they're watching.
I speak to the owner of Offshore, you know, infrequently, but we have a conversation now and then. I don't think I ever told him this, but the only reason I joined Offshore is because I wanted to be a part of that community. I already knew how they all traded because I'd reverse engineered everything. Like, when I'm talking about everything, I had spent hours and hours and days and days and days getting their charts, reverse engineering it, like, and just finding little nuances that maybe they didn't even know. Just looking at it and being like, oh, this one did that, that one did that. But yeah, I literally just joined for the community, and I built some Pip Smuggler, built a fantastic, he's like a super close friend of mine now. I only met him through Offshore.
Love that. So obviously from that, we can dive into, obviously you set up a business, FX Connect. And yeah, let's get into it, man. Cause I think it's sick. Like, the way that there's not a lot in this game that brings traders together, and as we've touched on, it's lonely. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people will build relationships through FX Connect. For people at home that don't know what FX Connect is.
Okay, so FX Connect, right, sort of was born from the ashes, as the saying goes. So I had a friendship with a girl called Mads, who I've known for years and years and years. We live near each other. She also had a friendship with a girl called Katie. They'd met through Twitter, and me and Mads had an idea to sort of have like a trader meetup. Mads and I had been trying to schedule a Twitter Spaces for God knows how long, and we just couldn't. We just timescales and stuff just didn't work. And so we sort of said, let's hook up in London. Like, we'll get a few people together, maybe go for some food, go for a drink and stuff. And so they started posting about it, and the amount of people who said, oh, I'll be there, I'll come. And we're sort of like, we're never going to get a table in a restaurant for this. Do you know what I mean? And so we said, well, why not turn it into an event? Why not get people together properly? You know, turn it into a proper event. We'll have some speakers there so people get value as well. And then one thing led to another. And literally a month later, we was hosting an event in London with 150 people plus who turned up. I think we sold out 120 tickets, and we had about 30, 35 like staff, speakers, and all, you know, and the rest of it. And this was literally a month after we'd come up with the idea. And so we was like, okay, there's something in this. People want this, especially in the UK, you know, people want this kind of place to network, place to learn, place to feel, it's gonna sound really cringy, but a place to feel safe.
Yeah.
Like, you're not being sold to. Because the biggest thing is, like, you go to the majority of events, and usually they've got something to sell at the end, like whether it's a course or a one-day event, you know. And if you don't go and pay now, you're never going to get this 99% discount ever again, sort of thing. And so we wanted kind of a safe haven from that. And yes, you got to pay for a ticket, but like, when you come to the event, you're meeting all these guys who you might have seen on Twitter. You know, you're taking so much value from it. You get to network, and so it's like a small price to pay. I just wanted to put that in there because I say we don't sell anything, but
yeah,
obviously
we
sell tickets.
It's cool.
And then we started blowing up on Twitter, to be fair. And I just thought, you know what, we're missing a trick here. Let's just get weekly spaces in. We'll bring on some guests. I've got some great connections in the industry. So I was just thinking, like, we'll bring people on. Like, you've been on a Twitter space a couple of times.
Yeah, man.
And the value that gets dropped, because there's no, this is why I love spaces. You're not looking at anything. So you just sit and you just listen. And when you, like, for example, you get going, you will just talk for about 5 or 10 minutes straight. Yeah. And the amount of people who've messaged me after that just going, this has blown my mind. Like, I never thought about this, that, or the other. And I'm like, we need to do more of this, right? Because people, it's like mutually beneficial. It grows our brand, grows your brand. And nobody's paying for it. So it also benefits the listener. But a lot of people are open to that kind of thing. Because, you know, not everybody wants to go and buy a course to meet Alb, for example. Not saying you sell a course, but like, you know, somebody might not want to go and buy a course and stuff, but they'll sit on a Twitter Spaces to listen to you talk because of the gems you drop. And so, yeah, we've just sort of scaled it up from there. We've got an event in Birmingham on 17th of September.
That's already happened.
Then we've got an event again in London in December. We're going to release the speakers this week for Birmingham. But if you don't know, your boy Alb is one of our speakers. We're hoping this is out before we actually get the speaker flyers. I mean, after we get the speaker flyers done. Otherwise, I've just blown the lid off the whole thing. But I mean, it's a massive pleasure to have you come down. And, you know, we're friends and stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But to have you come down to an event, I know the value that you will drop. And I know, you know, how good you'll bounce off. I'm going to say because his speaker will have, his flyer will have been dropped as well. But obviously, we're going to have Michael Bamber on stage with you as well. You two know each other. There's going to be some sick chemistry between you there. And it's that kind of thing. Like, do you want the opportunity to come and listen to these two guys who've gone through the industry and learned all this stuff and now, you know, talk about it for free, essentially, other than buying a ticket? And that's kind of where the vision went. We're going to go global next year. Like, and yeah, it's just, it's sick, man. But it's so fun to do. Like, I love
doing it. That's what I mean. There's such a like fulfillment from it. I said to you before, I was like, I wish we met before you did it. I'd love to do that. Because I just think it's such a sick thing to bring so many people together and just have those meaningful conversations with people. Mm-hmm. You'll meet some of the best people you've ever met from that. Like, everyone I know, like even us, everyone I actually speak to on a daily basis now were not in my circle a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? There are people I've met online that have the same kind of values, the same kind of vision, and they're the people you want around you. A lot of the people, unfortunately, that you surround yourself with from like the norm don't have that vision, and then they try and hold you back and jealousy can come in. Whereas I feel like these things, it's just like, you did that. Oh my God, that's sick. And you'll go home pumped. Like,
yeah.
Oh, this guy told me this, and you'll be telling your bird and they'll just be looking at you like they do, like, okay. Like, but you'll be
this
having
dude
such a
trades on a floor. Yeah. So, you know, and they're like, what the hell's a floor? Like,
what do you mean? Like, he actually sits on the floor. Why
he lies down on the floor all day trading.
Why don't you buy him a desk? But like, no, I think that's sick. I'm really looking forward to obviously Birmingham. I'm going to come to all of them anyway, regardless if I speak at them, but I'm going to be there because I just think it's sick. And like, I'm looking forward to where you guys take it because I think it's going to be huge and it's going to really change the game in this industry because there isn't much of that. Like you say, any ones you go to, they're like, yeah, it's 10 grand ahead. And you're like, for what? And they're like, oh, well, you're going to have to do this, you have to do that. People just want to come, have vibes, have a good day. So now I'm looking forward to it. So if you want to come to Birmingham and the tickets haven't already sold out, then there might be a link in the description or something, or keep my eyes on socials and there'll be one soon and you can get in there and look forward to seeing you all there. I've got a random idea I just got.
Let's do it. He's been building up to this. He wanted me to eat some hot sauce.
Yeah, I was
going to get some hot sauce.
I was going to just pull hot sauce out of the bag and be like, right, you got to eat this while
he's going
to
lather me up in hot sauce.
I've got a random idea. People are going to giggle, but why don't we play rock, paper, scissors and the winner gets to ask the other one a question?
Okay, let's do it.
So every time you win, you get a question and you just quick fire it. So we're going to go 1, 2, 3, shoot, yeah? None of this freaking cheating shit. And there's no dynamite in there if you try and start doing mad shit. Right, ready? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Oh, I don't know, man. He like hesitated.
I just kept it.
You can ask me a question.
Okay, so
throw him on the spot.
How deep do you want this question to be?
I'm above it, mate.
Okay, so if you was to blow all your accounts tomorrow and you was or the market shut down, what's the biggest thing that you're grateful for over the period of being a trader? Or what's the thing that you miss the most?
About if I couldn't trade again.
Yeah.
I would miss the freedom it's given me to be able to, I don't want to say not have to worry, like I've made it, but I feel like I don't stress about the bills, about being with the kids. For a great example, right? 6 weeks holiday right now. A couple of years ago, I would have been like, we've got to find someone to have the girls every day, or I've got to message the boss and be like, yo, I can't come in. And he'd be like, right, you're not getting paid and you'd lose money and you'd be faffing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it would tamper with that to a degree because for me, trading is one of my main sources of income. So it would definitely apply a load of pressure, but I could say I've made some sick memories and I've lived a good life. And I've got the experience now that I feel like trading's tested me so much, I could go into something else business-wise and I feel like I'd be all right.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Builds character.
Yeah, man.
And do one more.
Yeah. We're going to do a couple. All right. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Oh, see, he's cheating, man. Nah, the guy's cheating.
I didn't know you were saying shoot as a fourth.
Yeah, rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Like that. Yeah? Okay. Yeah. All right, ready? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Oh, as if, man. Getting smoked.
Damn, I've run out of questions.
Just okay. Fire anything.
So a quick fire question, because I want you to cover this right after what we spoke about. What's the biggest revelation that you've had in the past couple of days?
Oh, my God. Day? So basically, I've been going through
and
data.
Throw fire here. I want you to, yeah, I want you to bait out some
smoke everyone up. So I've been going through loads of data, as you do, right, when you're looking at your life performance. And as you know, I've mentioned it on YouTube, I've had quite a drawdown period over the last couple of months. I had a drawdown, which I got out of. And then I'm in a drawdown at the moment. I'm around like, I feel like 6% down. You know, always assuming the market should do something is usually bad anyway, because saying it has to hit 1-3, 1-4, 1-2, whatever, there's always an element of like, what if it doesn't? And being able to read price action for what it is and go, maybe I should get out. Like, maybe the market's telling me this, maybe I should get out. Not for emotion, not like, oh, I'm cutting my position short. But I basically decided, after speaking to Sakir and him saying about data, I ran all my data for over sort of 30 months now, including this live data for this year. I decided to just one-to-one all my trades. And I was messaging yesterday about it because I was just curious, especially with like firms and a couple of exciting things happening, which I can't speak about. Doing one-to-one, my strike rate goes up to 78 to 86%, which yes, there's variables, but bearing in mind, this is also live data. And the winning streak is 17 and the losing streak is 2 over 30 months. Now, for somebody that perhaps is struggling, for somebody that I get countless messages on YouTube, I'm in loads of drawdown, what do I do? Maybe analyze your data and just ask, are you sometimes shooting for the moon based on an image that's been created online that may not align with what your actual vision and goal is? Not because I'm in drawdown, may I add, because I don't care about it. As you know, I've said to Kia many times, I'm not bothered that I'm in drawdown because it can happen. My losing streak is, well, yesterday I won, so my losing streak's over. If you're on a losing streak, most people are like, I wish this losing streak would stop. And it's usually minus ones. Mm-hmm. So imagine if you're on a 17 win streak, you're not going to really care. But I think people need to just look at, are you trying to be this perfect trader and be the best trader online because you want validation from others to feel great? But if I make it all sound funny, like, yeah, I got out of drawdown in one trade and I do 1 to 20s and I'm a G, I know the market and I know the algo, that makes me get more views because I'm trying to, you're thinking I've got something you haven't. But the chances are every single person watching this probably gets one-to-one way more frequently than you think. But you just think it's not enough because the perception and image you have is different. Now, yes, you do need a high strike rate. I'm not trying to say doing one-to-one, you've got a 20% win rate, you're going to be good, because you're not. But what I'm saying is just look at your data and see, because it might be a revelation for you.
He knows I love this kind of thing because I have a relatively low risk to reward because I trade level to level. But one of the biggest things I hate about when people like, or one of the biggest notions that I hate, sorry, in the industry is I can lose 40% of my, I can win 40% of my trades. And as long as my risk to reward is, you know, positive, I can be a profitable trader. Or let me reword that because that was awful. I can lose 60% of my trades, right? If you're losing 60% of your trades, you've got a losing strategy. Flip it on its head, right? If your strategy says buy, you fucking sell. Because there's a 60% chance that if you sell, you're right on that trade idea. Obviously, it brings in variables where you look at your risk to reward. And let's say you do trade with a 3-to-1 risk to reward and you've got a 40% strike rate. Obviously, you've got 60% strike rate, but your RR is actually like less than one. So there's things that you have to take into context and it isn't just a flip it on its head, but the strategy is still a winner if you flipped it on its head and, you know, brought your stop down and managed to figure out a way to adjust it like that. So anything below 50%, and you know I said this to you yesterday, anything below 50% is subpar and you need to scrap it, right? There's something wrong with the system or your mindset or something that's going wrong when you're trading that strategy. You should not lose more trades than you win, and it is as simple as that. I don't care who smokes me. I don't care who comments saying I'm talking bullshit. This is pure facts, right? Because if it's less than 50%, I'm looking at the camera as if like, I'm looking you in your soul. If you lose over 50% of your trades, it is a losing strategy and you need to adjust something. The other thing that I wanted to comment is that if you do scale down to a 1-to-1, your maximum adverse excursion and your maximum favorable excursion, MAE and MFE for short. And essentially what they do is the MAE, which maximum adverse excursion, that tracks how far a winning trade went against you before it turned into a winner, right? So let's say, for argument's sake, you trade 100 pip target and a 50 pip stop, right? But every single trade, or on average over 100 trades, they go against you 30 pips. You know with confidence that, or the max it ever went against you with 30 pips, you know with confidence you can scale your stop by 20 pips and still never lose. Like, it's not going to affect your strike rate. Automatically, that gives you a better RR and more money. Alternatively, you can enter 28 pips lower, obviously taking into account slippage and spreads and stuff. And therefore, again, that improves the RR on your strategy. It also sits you through less drawdown, many benefits to that. on the flip side, the MFE, which is your maximum favorable excursion, measures how far the trade went in your favor, right? So again, you're targeting 100 pips on every trade. For let's just say you have a fixed strategy, 50 and 100, 2-1. But on average, every trade goes for you 150 pips. You're missing 50 pips on that move on average. Increase your risk to reward. Yeah. And then you kind of increase it from that, from your data, rather than just saying, I was told by a trading guru that 40% strike rate with a 3-1 risk to reward is like, I'm going to make it. Now, that's not me saying that you won't make it if you have that. And yes, in theory, it works. But anything below 50% is subpar. You could flip it and probably perform better. And if you've got a 20-30% strike rate and hit 20-1s, like, come on, dude.
I've been there, man.
Enough.
You're bringing back PTSD.
If you lose like 10, 15 trades in a row because you trade stupid high risk to reward. And again, there's people that do this. I know people who do it. But they're wired in some psychotic way. If you, like, I don't know many people who can sit through a 10, 15 trade drawdown. I couldn't do it.
It's tough. I've done it, and it's not nice. Like I said before in previous pods, you know, it does affect your day. And I think there's the reason I'm mentioning about the 1-1 is not saying, oh, that's what I'm rolling with, everyone should do it. What I'm saying is we're sharing an insight, and there's a lot of people out here struggling, but you're probably already profitable. Because the end of the day, the game of trading is to make money. It's not to be the best. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never come into it to want to be the best. I've probably had an ego at times going, yeah, I'm the Don. I use my freaking bitch, and, you know, I literally run the ECB. But the reality is I don't. Like, and I'm not bothered. I'm not sponsored by Deutsche Bank or someone's. Like, at the end of the day, I'm just a small, very, very small fish. And my job is to make sure I make money. And if the stats are constantly showing you that, it's always worth looking at. Because remember as well, this is like live stats, a lot of back-tested stats. You never factor in comms, you never factor in market conditions, you never factor in spread. So even though it's a 1-3, it might be a 1-2.7. Like, there's a lot of things to look at. Yes, the same with the 1-1, it could be a 0.7. So there's, of course, there's a lot to play with. But I'm just curious, for those that always message me, like, I'm losing, just see how many pips, like you say, do you actually get on a trade? Because just because you're saying I've got to hit 1-3 or 1-5, what if your sweet spot's 1-2.6? You're not going to know that without gathering the data and looking at that. So definitely look at that. And obviously, like, you know, we've got some big opportunities coming up that we've been speaking about, which we can't talk about yet.
We're talking about them, but we can't talk about it, but we'll speak about them in private.
Yeah. But like, my main focus now, when those kind of opportunities come up, is like, I need to be on the fucking ball. Yeah. Like, there's no playing games. There's no mucking around. It's serious shit that you need to be on the ball with. So no, I think that's a sick one. We're not ending yet, because I ain't won rock, paper, scissors once. So come on. I'm not going to get smoked 3 times. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Bruv!
Go on, I'm gonna pass the question over to you, even though man's undefeated.
Man smoked me on scissors. Rock, paper, scissors.
It's my psychology, dude. Man's my mindset is different.
Reading the mind. All right, then. So I'm going to go a bit different here. If you could have a dinner with 3 guests, who would you have?
Jim Carrey.
Yes. Go on.
Trader Dante.
Okay, that'd be a mad mix.
Just because, I'll give explanations for all of them after. So Jim Carrey, Trader Dante. Right now, my answer will be different, and that's purely because I listen to a lot of him, is Eric Thomas.
Yeah, you've mentioned him a lot.
Yeah, so I love his vibe as like a motivational speaker. But anyway, so Jim Carrey for me is like, not only is he a comedy genius, I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, I get that, he's a little bit silly, but he's like me, he doesn't take life too seriously. He's happy to look like a fool. But if you go and listen, I mean, just go on YouTube or Spotify and type Jim Carrey motivation. The dude drops some of the biggest like motivating stories like I've ever heard. Like, he talks about, he like wrote a note basically saying he was going to make $1 million and stuff like this. And then his dad passed away and he buried his first million with his dad, or something along the lines of it. And, you know, he made his million like the same week that his dad passed away and stuff. That's the story. I've basically butchered his best story. I've basically butchered his story. But when you listen to him talk, he's so like, he's just so on it. And the way he thinks about the world, it's just, I could just listen to him talk all day. I'll leave Trader Dante till last. Eric Thomas, for me, his style of motivating people, the energy he would bring is just crazy. I'd be eating my dinner, like, and he'd be there going, are you working hard enough? Are you working? Do you know what I mean? And like, having, just being around that energy for like, you know, even just a dinner date would just be sick. And then Trader Dante, like, hopefully he sees this video, because, you know, I want to...
hook it up, man.
I want dinner with Trader Dante. Nah, he's... For me, in this specific career, he's the biggest inspiration I have. I've followed him longer than anybody else. The dude just spits facts. Like, he would just be, I'd probably only speak to him. I'd just have Jim, I'd have Jim Carrey and E.T. talking at me the whole time and I'd just chat to them.
Be like that, stare, and he'd be like, can I get a restraining order on you, please? No, I love that. I just want to say, thanks for coming on, mate.
It was no, I appreciate it.
And we're going to do more of this. You're going to see a lot more content from us anyway, regardless. And yeah, without further ado, I'll catch you all in the next one. Peace and love, gang. And check out the links below for Keir's socials. Make sure you go follow him because he drops a lot of value. Also drops signals on Twitter, so check him out. Peace and love.
30% strike rate.